This is Jay Sekulow with a preview of the Mueller hearing.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Hey, everybody. Hope you had a good weekend, and welcome to what is supposed to be Mueller Testimony Week. So what do we expect to happen? I've gotten a lot of calls from media already saying, what are the pre-plans? What is the president's legal team doing to prepare? And the truth of the matter is, there is not a war room. There is not a pre-planning meetings that are going on as far as how to respond. It's much like the Mueller report itself. If you remember, we had a counter-report prepared to respond to the Mueller report, but when we actually saw the report, we had a chance to see it a couple days before it was released, and then, of course, when it was released to the public, we were able to respond. But the fact is, we ended up not issuing that counter report because we didn't feel there was anything in there worthy of responding to. Now, I anticipate that I will probably do a great deal of media on Wednesday night and Thursday, assuming that, in fact, the hearing does take place. There's a lot of jockeying right now as to other people being asked to attend that may or may not play into this, and that is some of Bob Mueller's deputies. But let me tell you what Bob Mueller said, and I think this is indicative of what you can expect if he does, in fact, testify. Let me play this number 35.
We chose those words carefully, and the work speaks for itself. And the report is my testimony. I would not provide information beyond that which is already public in any appearance before Congress.
So he says that the report is his testimony, so I expect that his testimony will be his report. What did the report conclude? It concluded that there was no collusion or conspiracy between the Trump campaign and Russian government or Russian operatives. That's number one. Regarding obstruction of justice, the report said there were difficult questions of law and fact. They were not going to make a normal prosecutorial determination, and in fact decided that it would be up to the Attorney General and the Office of Legal Counsel and the Deputy Attorney General to make a decision as to the issues of obstruction. What was the conclusion there? There were not obstructive conduct. No obstruction. So there have been, I think, three hearings so far by the House and Intelligence Committee that have received not much attention and not much traction. I think this is an attempt at the, some say the second bite at the apple. I say like the fifth bite at the apple to see if they can get attention to it. They're not going to, in my view, because here's what happened. The underlying basis upon which this investigation commenced was this concern over Russian collusion with the Trump campaign. It was clear there was not, case closed.
Yeah, I mean, this is what is, again, I think for all of these members of Congress, they say they've been practicing their questioning. You know what they're nervous about is that these members of Congress get their 2 minutes or their 5 minutes and they don't stop talking. And so you don't ever get to a question of Mueller. Mueller won't answer their questions. That's a second question. Some are thinking this is what some have gotten to, that they're going to just ask him to read portions of it directly for the entire time they have allotted for their question. These are Democrats because they feel like the American people haven't heard it and they feel like it would be more powerful hearing it from him. I think, you know, again, an old guy sitting there reading a report, which he didn't really write on his own. He had a bunch of co-authors write that was put together. I think what you're going to see is someone kind of stumbling through words because it's not like it's only his words. It was a compilation of a number of different prosecutors writing. I think at least 4 or 5 different authors. And so what I think that could be weak. And then the Republicans, you know, they're going to have tough questions for him. Like, why did you think it was your role to exonerate someone anyways as a prosecutor if you brought no charges?
Well, we're going to get into all of this coming up in the broadcast. We're going to take your questions at 800-684-3110. We're also going to talk about Bernie Sanders' $15 an hour minimum wage, except he doesn't want to do that with his own team. We'll talk about how that plays out. We're going to talk about Iran and what they're doing with boats in the Straits of Hormuz and the impact that's going to have. So there's a lot of things in the news, and of course, we'll talk about the upcoming Mueller event. We'll take your phone calls as well at 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110, 800-684-3110. Let me encourage you also to support the work of the ACLJ. We're in a matching challenge. Jordan's going to let you know how.
Yeah, folks, you go online to ACLJ.org, and whatever you donate is effectively doubled at ACLJ.org. It's a great time. The month of July is a matching challenge month to donate and support the work of the ACLJ financially. We need your contributions, and you can double the impact of those donations at ACLJ.org.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Bob Mueller testifying, planning to testify on Wednesday. That's going to start at 8:30 in the morning. It will be concluded after 3 hours, so at 11:30 in the Judiciary Committee. That will be mostly focusing on the issues related to obstruction, or that's what their House is saying. The House Intelligence Committee is going to focus on... Yeah, so that's Volume 2. Is going to focus on Volume 1, which is the no collusion volume, is what I like to call it. You got the no obstruction and the no collusion volumes there. Having said that, it's Washington. Who knows? Things are always in play, and you just don't know until it actually happens. I anticipate, my view is right now, that he's going to testify. We'll see what happens on Wednesday. We'll give you analysis now. We'll be on air while he's still testifying, or I guess right when he finishes, at least with the Judiciary Committee.
Might still be, I mean, depending on how many breaks they take right, how long it has opening statement. Yeah, I mean, these things longer. Can take much longer than even agreed to. I mean, I imagine he's still testifying by afternoon tomorrow. I mean Wednesday. I mean because
it's 3 hours, but they're going to take breaks and
then again.
And then he goes and speaks to the House Intel Committee after that.
Yeah.
So, we'll take a look at how all that plays out.
It's like a 5-6 hour range. I mean, that's why I think to get the American people to it's going to be whether or not they can get sound bites from Bob Mueller, not Jerry Nadler. We know where he feels.
Well, let's play
issues.
One of Jerry Nadler's.
Yeah, but we know where Adam Schiff's.
Let's play Adam Schiff's. I thought this is interesting.
Who better to bring them to life than the man who did the investigation himself? We want the people to hear it directly from him, not filtered through Bill Barr, who had his own misleading characterization of it, but from the man who did the work himself.
First of all, he didn't do the work himself. He supervised the work. That's number one. Number two, I don't think he wrote that report. It was written by, I believe, his staff, and it's incoherent, to be quite frank. And legal analysts have said that. Now, this isn't just coming from people that are on the president's legal
team.
That's
why no one's read it, because it's it's actually unreadable.
And I do think they're going to play this one, though. I think they're going to try to get Mueller to read sentences out of the report.
Yes.
Which is so juvenile. But they're going to do that to try to create a soundbite.
Try to create a soundbite like the president. We could not, we could not clear the president.
But by the way, when they keep going back to that, I want to remind people, if we were able to exonerate the president, we would have. We weren't able to do that. They also said we're not accusing him of a crime. Everybody drops off that part, right? We're not accusing the president of a crime. We're not exonerating him either, is basically what it says. Now, to take it a step further here, and I think you have to take it a step further here, is the fact is their obstruction theory, I told you from the outset, was absurd. Here's Jerry Nadler.
We're going to ask specific questions about, look at page 344, paragraph 2. Please read it. Does that describe obstruction of justice? And did you find that the president did that, for example?
And let's say, assume he says, you know, everybody could read the report. I'm not going to read the report. But let's say he says, I'm going to read it. And then he's going to say what? He's going to say what he said in his report. While it might be construed this way, it could also be construed that way.
To that conclusion.
Yeah, so we could not come to a conclusion.
Thus you don't bring...
Yeah, so therefore, I think that it's an interesting tactic, and I do think that's going to be the tactic.
Yeah.
I just don't think it's going to be successful.
Now here's a question I think that's great from Ruth, and one that we've all want asked to Bob Mueller. And this one, I think if he shows up, he deserves to have to answer over and over and over again by Republicans. So Ruth put this in. My question for Mueller would be, when did you know there was no collusion? And I'd follow that up with, why didn't you stop your investigation then? Because we know, based on how the report reads, Dad, it's volume one and two. Volume one had to be wrapped up pretty early. They knew there was no collusion very early on in their investigation. Why did you continue wasting the taxpayers' money?
I don't think they're going to, I think he's going to say, well, our mandate was open-ended. I really think that's what it's going to be.
You don't think he can answer, when did they decide, when did they know there was no collusion?
They knew it very quickly.
Do you think he'll say that?
No.
Yeah, he'll dance around it. So even though they had a volume one.
You know, no one's reporting what the judge found in the Concord Management case. That was on Friday. The trial court judge that's handling that. That's where these Russian trolling farms and all this.
Yeah.
They said it was controlled by the Russian government. And the judge said there's no evidence of that. Zero evidence to say this was controlled by the Russian government.
But even the spot, it wasn't just a troll farm for troll farm's sake.
Correct. And that's raised a whole other host of issues. Let's go ahead and take a phone call.
Yeah, let's go to Kathy in Washington State on line one. Kathy, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Thank you for taking my call. I love you all. And I just, the question that we would have is, how many interactions, Mr. Mueller, have you had, you and your team had, with the Democrats in the last 6 weeks or so? We feel that the Democrats want to come up with some kind of soundbite to use against President Trump.
You're right that they're looking for a soundbite. They're looking for any soundbite at this point because it's recording a zero on the Richter scale of ripple in the United States politically. So they're looking at some kind of anything at this point. That would be a very interesting question to ask. If it's just related to the logistics of the testimony, it's one thing. If it's previewing questions and answers, that would be quite something else. I don't have any information that that's the case, but I mean, I don't know. I think it's a worthy question to ask. Ruth on Facebook said, my question would be, when did you know there was no collusion, as Jordan said? I think that's a good one. Sherry on Facebook says, what happens if he doesn't show up?
Well, I asked you that today. I said, you know, because, you know, he didn't show up the first time. They delayed it. And we know he doesn't want to testify. I mean, it's been very clear. He said that himself. He thought that statement, which he botched,
right,
which was a good example of why he doesn't want to testify,
right,
that was going to be it, and that this report speaks for itself. I think if there's any way for this guy to get out of doing this on Wednesday, he will do it. He will get out of it. I mean, I think there's – and I don't know about percentage chances. The closer we get, the less likely it is that he can figure that out. But – I could just imagine it. I can imagine finding out tomorrow, as we did a couple weeks ago, that it's either delayed again indefinitely, you know, something like that, or that he's decided, because of how politicized it's become, it's not proper for him to be there. And they may try with subpoenas and that. So then they're going to subpoena the guy they think is going to be their savior, and they're going to take him to court to enforce a subpoena. I mean, you know, it would be. I still think it's within the realm of possibility because we've already seen it happen once with his testimony.
They already moved the testimony, so are they going to? Could it be moved again? Of course, anything's possible. I mean, I don't think it's Washington D.C. Everything is possible. But here's what Bob Mueller said about speaking. I mean, this is his own words. Take a listen.
Now, I hope and expect this to be the only time that I will speak to you in this manner. I am making that decision myself. No one has told me whether I can or should testify or speak further about this matter. There has been discussion about an appearance before Congress. Any testimony from this office would not go beyond our report. It contains our findings and analysis and the reasons for the decisions we made.
So he does not want to testify. He said that it's not going to go beyond the report. He said that no one told him he could not, should or should not testify, which I believe is the case. No one's commanded him at this point to do anything. And I think that right now, he's a reluctant witness. I think that's some of the potential that the Democrats are concerned about, is that they have a reluctant witness on their hands. And when you have a, I've been trying cases for 40 years, when you have a reluctant witness, guess what? Things usually do not work out quite the way you'd like.
No, that's right. I mean, so it's again, they have someone who didn't want to be there in the first place, who could just literally say it's in the report to every question, or my response to that is in the report. I don't even think he has to give page numbers to him. He knows it's either in volume one or volume two. You know, he could answer back, you know, we covered what we covered in the report. That's all I'm going to say. It could be very boring. And I think that that's where Democrats are taking a huge risk. I've always thought this was a giant risk for Democrats because they think Bob Mueller is going to come in, and these guys never come in and really, he is not Jim Comey. Okay. I know this is a guy running away from media attention, not seeking it. Okay, Jim Comey was the opposite, so he worked for them to some extent because he wanted to play up to the media. Bob Mueller does not. In fact, after his statement, he had to issue a clarification through his office that what he said was not correct. So people are wondering, is Andrew Weissman writing his words? That's one of the most aggressive prosecutors in the government who always gets overturned for being too aggressive. So he never gets past the district court level, if you will, in the federal court system because he's so aggressive in his tactics, which get the case in trouble that he's trying to prosecute. And it seemed like he read a statement he had probably never read before. This time around, I'm sure he's now gone through the report that he issued, but they are not like his in his own words. They're not his own words. He had a team put together a report. It wasn't like Bob Mueller sat there and wrote out these 480 pages. Bob Mueller was the senior prosecutor overseeing a team of people who put together those pages. So having him read through it, I think actually could sound like someone who isn't as familiar with what he's reading as people expect the public would expect him to like know exactly what they're talking about on page 330 or page 344. I mean that is not.
I think all of, I get that they're doing it. I think all of it backfires. All right, we're getting ready to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Iran. Coming back in the second half hour of the broadcast, we're going to talk about Bernie Sanders' $15 issue, and we're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. Jordan's going to let you know about our matching challenge campaign. We're in the last, really, week or so, 10 days, yeah. I guess, left. A little less than 10 days for the challenge for this month of July.
Yeah, the July matching challenge, very important for the ACLJ financially. You contribute to the ACLJ right now at aclj.org. Whatever you financially contribute is doubled. So we give you the example, $10 becomes $20, $25 becomes $50, $50 becomes $100, but you're only charged your initial donation. You're only charged twice. We just have donors this month ready to match your donation. Now, they don't take action unless you do. So you've got to make the initial donation. It's 501c3 donations, tax deductible at aclj.org. Be part of our matching challenge. That's aclj.org. Go online today. And double the impact of your donation, financial contribution to the American Center for Law and Justice. That's at aclj.org. We'll be right back.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
All right, I want to come off the issue of politics for a moment and deal with a situation that's developing in the Straits of Hormuz in Iran, and that is the now seizure of two British oil tankers in the Persian Gulf by the Iranians. And Jordan, this made news starting last week, but then, of course, they've increased it over the weekend even.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, so you've got two vessels that have ultimately been seized by Iran of the UK's. One was let go when they found that there was no one to capture on the vessel.
And they wanted British
citizens.
They
were British.
Yeah.
So they let the vessel finally go. So it was a UK-flagged vessel, but the employees on the ship were not UK citizens. The second vessel is still in Iranian custody, and it has UK citizens on it. So not only are they holding the vessel, they are holding hostages now from not the U.S., as we've seen in the past from the Obama administration, but now the U.K. is having that moment where they're going to have to decide, how do we treat Iran? Now, they have one of Iran's ships seized that was illegally transporting oil to Syria. They said if they can watch that ship return and it does not go to Syria, they'll let it go. It was in Gibraltar. But again, you now have Iran holding UK hostages. Realize that. And this accusation that they've arrested 17 CIA spies that are all Iranian, by the way.
These aren't U.S. citizens.
The Trump administration said is totally false, an outright lie. So Iran is trying to make all this news to its domestic audience, but is also taking extremely provocative steps.
So, Wes, how provocative is this?
It's very provocative, and the potential for a misstep, an extreme miscalculation on the part of Iran is so very, very great. The United States right now has a total of 21 ships, a robust force in the Persian Gulf and the area of the Straits of Hormuz. Six of those are from the Boxer amphibious group, which also contains, you know, a couple thousand combat-ready Marines. And, of course, the USS Abraham Lincoln's there with another 15 ships as part of the carrier strike force. But here's the deal. We're getting a lot of publicity about Iran's misbehavior. For example, last week when we shot down the drone, what has trickled out, it hasn't gotten as much reporting from the Pentagon and from media that were on the USS Boxer, the ship that brought down the drone, right, is that wasn't the only thing going on. The Iranians, their tactic is always to try to overwhelm and swarm. While that drone was approaching the Boxer, there were Iranian speedboats in the area. Meanwhile, an Iranian unarmed helicopter came less than 100 yards from the deck of the Boxer. They sent up a MH-60 Seahawk, which is an armed U.S. helicopter, to chase it away. While that's happening, another ship, an Iranian ship, pulls alongside the Boxer 500 yards away, which is extremely close at sea. The thing that amazes me, Jay, is that the professionalism and the restraint of the U.S. forces is why we haven't already started shooting, because that is extremely dangerous behavior on the Iranians. Not just provocative, it's dangerous. When you have an Iranian helicopter coming that close, it's a surprise we didn't shoot it down.
So, Skip, Wes says it's dangerous, it's provocative, it's also a violation of international law.
Absolutely. The right of innocent passage has been recognized for centuries. These ships are going about their normal course of action. They were in the proper sea lanes. They were doing nothing provocative, doing nothing wrong. Therefore, there was no right for them to be stopped. With respect to the Iranian vessel that the British are now holding, that was done based on a UN Security Council resolution. So they had the authority to do it. The Iranians are now trying to do something to get back. But let's remember what's going on right now. The United States is putting pressure on our European allies to get out of this nuclear deal, and Britain is part of that. And now you have the Iranians being provocative against the British. This can't play well for the Iranians in any way, shape, or form.
Well, that's what I tend to think. Now, the interesting thing is we know they're also playing to a domestic audience.
They are. Their economy is in shambles. The people, there's a lot of unrest there. The fact that they're trying to flex muscle against the largest military in the world, and they're also alienating Europe, by the way. Germany and France are really siding more with the UK and thinking about increasing sanctions on Iran. But the Iranian government wants their people to see them as strong. And so they're doing this. They're also, you know, arresting 17 people allegedly working for the CIA. All of that is for their domestic audience, because their domestic audience is pretty unhappy with the Iranian government.
But they also, Jordan, run a risk here of elevate. I mean, the potential for a mistake to happen, which can cause an elevation, is great.
Yes. I mean, one person gets killed. One Iranian Revolutionary Guard member fires off his gun. We have to shoot down one of their helicopters. I mean, so go either way. But I'd say a mistake by them is more likely. Like a mistake by them, which causes us to have to fire. So the helicopter got too almost that really has happened. We're just that restrained.
Very restrained.
But if they try to, if they are our commanders, we played it for our Facebook and Periscope audience, but our commanders have been very clear. Like if they tried to do this to a U.S. flag vessel, we would take action. We're not going to let them drag our vessel into Iran like the Obama administration did.
So what would happen, Skip, if they did take direct action against a U.S. vessel? What do you expect to happen?
Well, if the Navy's nearby, they're going to take action. They will come in and they will intervene. They'll put their ship between the two sides if they have to. If they have to, they will take off aircraft from the – we have, you know, a carrier task group. We have the Marine carrier there that has helicopters and other types of aircraft. Those will go in after whatever has to be done, and we will take the ship back if it comes to that.
I saw a picture in the Wall Street Journal of our carrier groups and our battle groups in the Straits of Hormuz. Let me tell you something. I don't think they need to be messing with the United States, but they don't need to be messing with the UK either. Here's what Tobias Elwood, the UK defense minister, had to say.
This is a hostile act. Let's not dodge away from that. This is a serious matter for which Iran must recognize.
When you talk about de-escalating tensions there, does that mean sanctions and things like that are off the table?
Well, a COBRA was taking place yesterday, so we're looking at the operational responsibilities from that. But we are going to be looking at a series of options.
Well, I think this proves the point of what exactly is going on here and what's exactly going down. So I think what we have to do right now, and this is the key element, is we have to be strategic, but we also have to be cautious of what they're trying to accomplish here, Wes.
Yeah, absolutely. And they are a bully, and they're a bully with a lot of power behind them militarily, but nothing compared to ours. The other thing that Iran is, and we have pointed it out on this radio broadcast repeatedly before, they are a criminal enterprise.
Yep.
The latest thing that came out over the weekend is that they are now saying that they will allow safe patches in international waters of other ships from other countries if they pay a toll. Basically, like the mafia, they're willing to sell protection, that if you pay the Iranian government, we won't molest your shipping. If you don't pay us a toll, we're going to interfere. And that is a classic criminal behavior on the part of the Iranian government. It is no surprise. Again, it's a very dangerous, provocative thing they're doing. Ultimately, it's not going to have a happy outcome for Iran economically and possibly militarily.
Look at the British very quickly. Take a listen to the – no, can't play right now? Okay. 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Can we play that sound by 15? No. It's 20. Yeah, we can. Okay. Take a listen.
This is a hostile act. Let's not dodge away from that. This is a serious matter for which Iran must recognize.
When you talk about de-escalating tensions there, does that mean sanctions and things like that are off the table?
Well, a COBRA was taking place yesterday, so we're looking at the operational responsibilities from that. But we are going to be looking at a series of options.
So this could fundamentally, as we said, backfire on Iran. We continue to take your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. I still put the question out there to you. If you could ask Bob Mueller a question on Wednesday, what would you want to ask Bob Mueller? 1-800-684-3110. Maybe Bernie Sanders about why his campaign staff is not allowed to work more hours now. And by the way, some untruths there, but man, you don't want Bernie Sanders running the U.S. economy. Support the work of the ACLJ, aclj.org.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. We are taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. One of the questions we posed to you as we're kind of previewing the Mueller testimony, and if the Mueller testimony does occur, I say that because, again, it's already been delayed once. The president has just said he doesn't think Bob Mueller should testify on Wednesday, that it will actually be bad for Bob Mueller. Bob Mueller has said he doesn't want to testify. Assume now that he is testifying until we hear otherwise, I guess. I mean, we're a couple of days out, so no reason not to assume that. But again, if you then had the opportunity during either on the House Intel Committee or the House Judiciary Committee to ask Bob Mueller a question, we asked you, what would you ask him at 1-800-684-3110? That's 1-800-684-3110. We've also updated you on, again, this situation in Iran. Wes, just to recap that, the UK has had a second vessel seized, this time with UK citizens on board. Those citizens are now being held, if you want to be, I'd call it hostage, deep inside Iranian waters. Mm-hmm. The vessel's deep inside Iran, and they're saying, even though they forced the ship out of the international waters on their own through illegal maneuvers, They are again provocatively saying, we're not going to let this ship just go. So again, holding UK, these again are private employees, but holding them hostage, I think playing this game of chicken with the Western world.
Yeah, it's a dangerous game as well. Iran is in deep trouble economically. They're trying to lash out. The interesting thing about this is that they were trying to get the European nations to give them some financial assistance and to figure out a way to go around the U.S. sanctions on their country. This is really going to backfire, I think, because by attacking British shipping, they are taking not only Great Britain, but Europe and aligning them against their own country. Part of what's going on also with the British shipping is that the British Navy is so much smaller than it used to be. Their nearest vessel was a frigate, which was 60 miles from this tanker when it was taken, and they were not able to intervene. I think they would have tried to stop it otherwise. Whereas the U.S. Navy, we have literally thousands of Marines on board these ships. There are 21 ships in the region. We can do a much better job of protecting international shipping and certainly for U.S. vessels in the area. But they're playing a very, very dangerous game. It's not going to have a happy ending economically or possibly militarily. And I think they're playing the game as if, you know, there was a different administration in the White House. This administration will allow our military personnel to defend themselves. They will protect the international shipping lanes. They simply will not tolerate Iran's behavior. I do not think we will fire the first shot unless we're actually really threatened. But the potential for this to become a shooting conflict is very, very great. And frankly, Jordan, it would not surprise me if in the next few days something unfortunate like that happens.
And it's not what the U.S. wants. It's not what the U.S. desires. It's not like we're the ones putting out that we're not like trying for the Iranian aggression. We're not doing anything different. We're prepared for it, but we're not like trying to put vessels just much closer, see how close they can get. It's Iran that keeps taking the provocative actions. This is Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. I mean, he says it very clearly. These are tough guys. If they wanted to go to war with Iran and make the case to go to war with Iran, they could have already made the case. They could have already shot down the helicopter, you said. They could have taken more aggressive action, like after the shooting down the drone, like taking out the missile site, killing 200-plus Iranian Revolutionary Guard troops and others. They didn't, because they don't want an escalation. Take a listen, Bite 7.
We don't want war with Iran. We want them to behave like a normal nation. Sure. I think they understand that, and I think the whole world is waking up to the fact that this threat is real. It's not just a threat against America. It's not just a threat against Israel. It's a threat against all of us.
You know, again, I think that's the key. That is the key, is that this is no longer just Iran is a bad actor, Wes, for Israel because they could shoot rockets there, or the U.S., but now the U.K. has got to deal with this, and they don't have, like you said, the capabilities we've got right there.
Yeah, and Europe and the United Kingdom, they depend on the oil coming through the Straits of Hormuz. Only about 10% of our petroleum products come through that strait, because we get most of ours domestically and from Canada. Europe needs the straits to stay open.
All right, folks, we want to encourage you. We're taking a break. We're taking your calls at 800-684-3110, but also don't forget our matching challenge campaign. That's at ACLJ.org. ACLJ.org. Back with more in just a moment.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at ACLJ.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Hey, welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. We've been talking about the situation with Iran. We've also got questions coming in on other topics. What do you want to do first?
Yeah, I think let's go to Greg in South Carolina on line one, and we'll kind of talk through again the IG report, Mueller questions, Iran questions. Greg, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Well, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is, when will the Inspector General release Horowitz, release his report? Seems like he's holding everything up, like Lindsey Graham wants to get started with his investigation, but we're not going anywhere holding anybody accountable.
Well, no, here's the situation. I mean, I think the report was ready to go this month, and then a bunch of witnesses, because of the appointment of the Attorney General's appointment of Durham as the U.S. attorney that's looking into the oranges of this whole issue and how this investigation started, a group of witnesses came forward that were now available to the Inspector General. So Horowitz is incorporating that into his report. So what I'm hearing, this is just what I'm hearing, is that it should be ready to go next month. But again, if there's more witnesses that come forward, it could be delayed. And I think at this point, you want to get as many witnesses as you can in a situation to show what nonsense was going on. Because the investigation of the investigators here, I think, is going to be a really big part of this. So that's going to be the end result of all of this. Is going to be these investigators were up to no good from the beginning. I think that's going to be when Mueller's done testifying and the Inspector General comes out and Durham's report is issued, the extraordinary and irregular actions of the investigation here and the way it was conducted are going to be breathtaking in scope.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I think Adam Schiff is freaking out too, because as head of the Intelligence Committee, he said this at the Aspen Forum, a security forum this weekend. This is one of these goofy statements.
Quotes.
He's like Bob Mueller. I have no reason to question the Inspector General's conclusion, but the investigation was put on a fast track. It was separated from a broader investigation, which is still ongoing. Why was that done? Done so he could be fired, not to get a pension. It was done to please the president when the initiation investigation is tainted. So are the results of that investigation. Except he said he would accept the conclusion. So I don't. I think they don't even know what they're talking about.
They do not want him issuing a report.
No.
And they are sure not wanting Durham to get to the bottom of this, Wes.
Yeah, and the fact that they're fearful of what the IG report is going to say, they're already, you know, dancing around it and trying to diss the IG's report. It's not even out yet. You know, the Dems in Congress are searching for wrongdoing that does not exist. That does not exist. And the polls indicate that the American people are really getting weary of this. Congress is taking no meaningful action on things that really matter, like border security, and yet they continue these inquiries and investigations and hearings.
People are saying it's the second bite at the apple with Mueller. I say it's like the fifth bite. You know, they had a hearing with John Dean. That got no intention. Then they had a bunch of law professors and prosecutors come up. That got no intention. Then I think there was one last week or the week before. It got no attention. It got no attention because the report is the report and it's done. The case, I keep saying this, and it's getting, you know, the case is closed. I mean, and then the Southern District closed its case. And now we know that the Inspector General is about to issue his report, and we're going to get to the bottom of how this investigation started. So all of this is going to come out. Heard from James Comey lately. A lot of James Comey comments coming out lately?
No, not lately.
Not lately.
A tweet, you know, saying the president's, you know, so bad because he's calling out, you know, Omar for her anti-Semitism and blatant anti-Israel anti-Semitism.
You can say anti-Semitic things, and that doesn't get you in trouble with the Democratic Party.
You're not racist if you're anti-Semitic.
Evidently, that's what they think. All right, let's go ahead and take another call.
World.
Yep. All right, take another call. We're taking your calls also, 1-800-684-3110.
Mary in Maryland online, too. Mary, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Mary.
Hi, thanks so much. I'd like to ask Mr. Mueller why he chose people for his committee who are already biased against President Trump.
I mean, they hired Jeannie Ray, the lawyer for the lawyer for the Clinton Foundation? You mean that? Or do you mean the Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, or the Fusion GPS Bruce Orr? I mean, you go through the list here, or Andrew McCabe. I mean, the whole thing's written. Look, the truth is, he's not going to answer any of those questions. He's going to say, I hired the most qualified people I could hire. The situation with Andrew Weissman and the rest of them, I think it'll all come out. We'll see what it means. At the end of the day, I expect that you're not. I think his report is his testimony. His testimony is report, and that's where this really ends up.
Absolutely. Again, we had a question come in on Iran, and I think we could take that before we turn to the Bernie Sanders issue as well. This came in from Mary on Facebook. How do we avoid a full-out conflict with Iran? That's what the administration wants to do. How do we avoid that?
Let me say, let's play what Mike Pompeo said. I think, again, have we played that already today?
Can we play it again?
Yeah, well, I think it's worth playing again. Here we go.
We don't want war with Iran. We want them to behave like a normal nation. Sure. I think they understand that, and I think the whole world is waking up to the fact that this threat is real. It's not just a threat against America. It's not just a threat against Israel. It's a threat against all of us.
Well, I think he's right. I mean, nobody wants war with Iran, but the Iranians are West continue to be the agent provocateur here.
Yeah, and in reality, Iran does not want a full-blown war with the United States because they know that would be the end of the regime and it would destroy, you know, their country's military. What they're seeking to do is what their modus operandi has been for decades, and that is to push the envelope, just enough to try and get their way and to basically, you know, hold the world, you know, blackmail or whatever, you know, and trying to extort people for protection money in the Strait of Hormuz. But I don't think they want a full-scale war. But if history is any indication of what's going to happen here, and I think it is, in the past, the only time that the Iranian mullahs have stopped this kind of provocative behavior is when we do launch an attack, take out some of the Revolutionary Guard Corps ships and their bases, kill some Iranians, which is so unfortunate. But in the past, Jay, that's the only thing that has stopped their behavior whenever it happens, and it happens from time to time.
But I think they are, they're trying to be provocative. They don't want a conflict with the United States, but they are being unbelievably provocative, whether it's the shooting down of the drone or the situation with our ships in the Straits of Hormuz or the British. Now, where does that end up? And I think that's the danger point here. They're violating international law. They're violating UN resolutions. That's not any great shock or any great new information I'm giving you. That's just fact. I think what we have to do, and I think what the United States have to do, is be cautious, but this regime needs to go. And I think the people of Iran, clearly, I mean, Jordan, you've been following this since 2009.
Yeah.
They want him gone.
It's been a decade since the Green Revolution, more than a decade now. And that was in June, really summer of 2009. So, again, real provocation with the U.S., I think, is very dangerous for Iran. What they want is a little bit of confrontation to try and show, put the fear back into their people. They want to scare their own people. That's why they're going to execute 17 random Iranians for being spies, even though they're not. They're going to execute these people and hang them in the streets. They do that to their own people to scare their own people, to also make them try to fear the U.S. as if the U.S. is trying to take them down. Now, I think the question is this. Do the Iranian people really, are they really concerned about the U.S. taking down that regime, or would they like the U.S. to dismantle that's the regime
good, for That's it? A really good question. What do you think, Wes?
Well, and I think what they're doing, they're trying to take the spotlight off their domestic problems.
How serious is that domestic problem?
Very, very serious. I mean, the unemployment rate is high. Their currency is, you know, so diminished against the world economy, against U.S. dollars. The people are suffering. There have been shortages of basic necessities from time to time, certain parts of the country. The people are really struggling, and what they're trying to do in the military, you know, acting out is an attempt to take the focus away from their domestic issues on the part of their own population.
Here's what Senator Ben Cardin, is a Democrat from Maryland, had to say about this.
It's very serious. The tensions couldn't be higher. What the Iranians did this past few days in stopping vessels in international waters, the downing of our drone, these are extremely dangerous situations that could explode. There could be a miscalculation which could lead to a military conflict.
And that's what the risk is in all of this, Jordan. I mean, the mistake, you said it could be unintentional, it could be intentional.
Yeah, that's
but it
right.
could escalate in a moment.
Oh, that's right. And then
and the
got,
Middle East is a powder keg.
Yes, and so people, and when we say escalation, we mean our U.S. forces having to directly engage Iranian forces without even making a decision about it. So not like an unmanned drone being shot down and do we fire back, but U.S. forces having to make the call that they have got to fire upon Iranian vessels, troops, Iranian Revolutionary yep. Guard members, and thus that means they Iran will be returning fire as well. So that's how this escalates into very close to a war, especially if Iran took one of those actions and decided to launch a cruise-style missile at Israel.
All right, well, coming up, are we going to get into the Bernie Sanders?
I think we finally will.
We will. Bernie Sanders, $15 wage.
Who do you not want running your country for the economic purposes only, even? Bernie Sanders.
We're going to
get
into
not running your business. Definitely not Bernie Sanders. Or your campaign. Bernie Sanders.
You want to give a little preview?
I mean, Bernie Sanders is really in trouble. His campaign, he is dropping in the polls. He is not that safe number two spot that he's used to, even from the last campaign. He's gotten older. His supporters have gotten, they've realized after that first debate, he is saying nothing new. And now he's made the mistake of letting his campaign unionize. These are short-term campaign staff who are there to work hard and not make a bunch of money. He allowed them to unionize and now demand a $15 an hour wage, that same $15 an hour wage that he wants to make federal, which, by the way, as a preview, the Congressional Budget Office said if we had a $15 federal minimum wage standard, you know how many people would lose their jobs? 3.7 million. So they want to cause an economic crisis. That's what Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders want. They want more people reliant on government and government services. They want less people employed. It's sick, but it's true because that's how you increase the size of government.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Hey, welcome to the broadcast, everyone. We're taking your calls at 800-684-3110, 1-800-684-3110. Jordan's got a little issue he wants to talk about.
Yeah, that's right. So we get into politics now. Final segment of the broadcast, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Bernie Sanders is in a bit of a mess. His campaign announced that it will cut hours, not because, again, his campaign is totally falling apart. So that's part of the reason. But he want because he let his campaign, seriously, let his campaign unionize. So he's dealing with a campaign staff of unionized workers. Folks, I've worked on three presidential campaigns and a number of other kind of campaigns. You don't work on a campaign for the money. And you don't get specific hours. And a lot of times you're happy to get any benefits at all. Most big presidential campaigns do offer health benefits, by the way, some kind of plans. But they're pretty short term because you know this has got an end date on it. You're either going to lose in the primary or the general election is going to happen and either the campaign is over, you won or lost. So there's multiple times a campaign can end at any time during the primary. You can then win or lose the primary, get a few more months, and then it's over, win or lose. So, but he's let them unionize. They said, we're not making enough money, Bernie. You tell everybody that you're going to pay everybody $15 minimum an hour, but we're only making 13, and we're working, you know, more than 8 hours a day, more than 40 hours a week. So now Bernie Sanders has literally cut hours to his staff, so they can make 15 hours a week, but they can only work 42-ish hours a week now. Which, by the way, I've never worked on a campaign where you work less than 80 hours a week. So not good sign for Bernie Sanders to unionize his campaign. What do they just say? No, we're done campaigning for the day. I mean, you're running for president of the United States. Your staff is supposed to be so dedicated that they work way more hours than they're getting paid for financially. But this just shows you the sickness of them letting them unionize and play this game. So he's cut their hours. You realize that. He's saying you can only put in a minimum number of this hours. Now, you may work extra. I'm sure there's some dedicated staff that will. But you can only file that you work this many hours a week to get that $15. So what does that mean? They will get paid less. So though they're getting $15 an hour, they're working less than 60 hours a week. Now they're working 42. They're going to make less money. You realize what this would mean. If he can't make this work for his small campaign relative to the U.S. economy, I mean, this would be a huge problem for our whole country, Bernie. I mean, could you imagine mandating you work less hours and earn less money, but you get a higher wage for those less hours that you work? That isn't Americans getting a living wage. That's Americans making less money and putting more Americans in poverty. Also, Wes, the Congressional Budget Office, which is nonpartisan, said 3.7 million people would be unemployed immediately if the federal minimum wage was raised to $15 an hour like Bernie Sanders wants. I think, you know, we should always look at minimum wage increases, but jumping to the $15 an hour, 3.7 6.7 million people unemployed, economic crisis in the U.S.
Yeah, and not only the CBO, but for several years now, with all the move towards $15 an hour minimum wage, economists have been saying that two things will happen. There will be jobs eliminated, and people will simply have their hours cut back. And that is exactly what's happening with the Sanders campaign. And the hypocrisy is pretty glaring. I mean, these people were working, as you said, 70, 80 hours a week. Most of them were getting paid around $12, $13 an hour. Now, their income has basically been cut in half. They're going to be $15 an hour, but limited to 42 hours a week. And in the meantime, in another act, I think, of poetic justice, perhaps, for Bernie Sanders, he's complaining because the media picked up on this and they're doing media stories, and he doesn't like the fact that his campaign workers went public with this.
Yeah, he said, so the self-described socialist said his junior field staff earned roughly $36,000 in salaries, a lot more than I got paid when I was a field staffer for the GOP. And again, I'm sure a lot more than those who are at that level. That is the entry level. That's like your first job in a presidential campaign is a field staff organizer. $36,000 a year plus employer-paid health care and sick leave. But he acknowledged their salary can effectively dip below $15 per hour if they work more than 40 hours per week. Well, a presidential campaign is a temporary job that you work as much time as necessary, sometimes without sleep if you need to, because you are trying to get someone elected to be the most powerful person in the world, and you have the honor of trying to do that, of attempting to do that. And you're supposed to believe in the person you're working for, thus happily realizing that you're not there for the economic boom. It's not like a long-term union gig to work for Bernie Sanders. But he did let them unionize. So he's upset because though they had their union negotiations with the campaign manager, this is quoting Bernie Sanders, it bothers me that people are out going outside of the process and going to the media. That's not acceptable. It's not what labor negotiations are about. It's improper. He's getting a taste of the real world now.
Yeah, yeah. The shoe is definitely on the other foot, and he's falling under this scrutiny. And I really think, I mean, there have been a number of things recently that have sort of, you know, been bullets being fired in Bernie Sanders' direction, some by some of the other candidates. But I think this is probably the beginning of what will be the end of his campaign. Well, I really don't think he has a chance of getting the nomination anyway.
But. Yeah, no, I don't either. I think he's always been far behind Joe Biden, second place, and the others have caught up to him, like Elizabeth Warren and Kamala Harris. And in some polls, Warren and Harris have already overtaken Bernie Sanders, and he's still far behind. Double digits behind. His fundraising has not been the same way. His campaign issued a statement. He also has a giant campaign that he's kept going. So it costs a lot of money. I mean, you got to raise a lot of money. He said, campaign issued the statement, quote, we know our campaign offers wages and benefits competitive with other campaigns, as is shown by the latest fundraising reports. Interesting there, Wes, that the campaign is paying the market rate. That they're looking at that. Wait, I thought this is a socialist campaign. It shouldn't be dictated by competitive market forces.
Yeah, who knew? Who knew? The other thing about Sanders' campaign that I think is hurting him, and that is when he was running against Hillary Clinton in the Democratic primary, his message was fresh and new. He inspired a lot of young people. Now his campaign is perceived as something like it's the same old thing. It's Bernie Sanders 2.0. And I don't think the excitement is as widespread or as deep as it was when he ran the first time.
I don't either. Folks, just to kind of finish out today, you know, we're going to look very closely. We're watching very closely about the Mueller testimony. I think we're looking for a couple things. One is what to expect, and we can continue to discuss that until it happens. And while it's happening, we'll be on the air live for you on that Wednesday. And if it's going to happen, because we saw on while we're on air today, the president saying he thinks it's very dangerous for Bob Mueller to do this, that Bob Mueller shouldn't put himself into this trap that's going to hurt his reputation. We know Bob Mueller doesn't want to do it. We know there's already been a delay once before. So we know the media will hype us up like this is 100%. Nothing is 100% when it comes to these congressional testimonies. I think you have to work towards the premise of assume it will happen. Prepare that it will happen. Okay? So all options that could occur. So you prepare that way. But also realize in Washington, D.C., you could find out that morning that it ain't happening. So, again, we're going to follow that closely. We're following what's happening in Iran and near Iran very closely with the Persian Gulf, the Strait of Hormuz, all of those issues, these provocative acts by Iran. And we're following the campaign as that starts heating up in 2020. We got the next round of presidential debates next week. The Democrats, it's really Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. So the two more liberal socialists in the first debate. In the second debate, it's Joe Biden and the minority candidates, which, again, I think can put Joe Biden in some serious danger because, again, he's going to be one side Kamala Harris, another Cory Booker. He's already apologized for his comments on busing. So there's a lot there as well. We need your support at the ACLJ, ACLJ.org, to be part of our matching challenge. That's ACLJ.org. Donate today. We will talk to you tomorrow.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important.